Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslovsky. Are you a big fan of silence too? Now, this show doesn't contain much of it, but I recommend getting plenty of silence elsewhere. This is episode number 76. What up, what up, what up? As I record this, I'm a shaggy-looking, funky-smelling dude. I'll admit it. I haven't shaved my face in about 7 days. Sorry, honey. And I just returned from walking my dogs in the sun and heat. It is June 2015, and it is a stinker outside. Whew. Good thing you don't use your sight or smell to listen to podcast episodes, huh? If you promise to keep your ears on me, though, I'm ready to give you a darn fine show, yo. Thank you for your time and attention. Although, I'm bummed. I can't see your wonderful smile or hear your joyous laughs as you listen. I got an idea, though. Take a picture of yourself listening to Smart and Simple Matters in its wild habitat, then tweet, email, or otherwise send it to me via my contact info in the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM076. Grooviness? Grooviness. Next up, before I let Jared Brock rock your socks off, what's up with my triple rhymes today, by the way? I think I have a problem. As I was saying, I need to send some gratitude to Philippa Jenkins for this post she left on Brooke McCallery's annual Declutter Challenge Facebook group. She said, "Joel's podcast is really great, and I draw a lot of inspiration for simple living from what he talks about. His passion for living a simple, meaningful, and connected to community life is off the charts. He's a super enthusiastic guy and comes across as a really authentic and amazing person." Why, thank you, Philippa. You know what else I am? Rosy-cheeked and smiling big right now. Hey, maybe I'll take a picture and send it to you right after I shave, of course. Now, on with the show. I must say that this one is kind of a hoot, and your upcoming chuckles are chucked in to a shorter than normal time frame and, dare I say, an above expectations episode. Are you ready to hear about why losing a $20 bet at age 5 can help for a lifetime? How about how volunteering at an eco resort or intentional community can change everything? Or perhaps why the spiritual leader for a billion people asked my guest to pray for him? Let's do it. Here we go. Perhaps it's just my personality, but I seem to attract people who simultaneously have a deep drive to improve the world and don't take life too seriously. My guest today, Jared Brock, is one of those folks. He's the co-founder of Hope for the Souled, the author of A Year of Living Prayerfully, lives with his wife and best friend Michelle in a 1975 Airstream trailer in a forest, and his video, How Christians Sign Emails, is hilarious. There's more to tell, of course, which is why I'm stoked to have him with me. Welcome to the show, Jared.
Thanks for having me, Joel.
Well, hey, let's get into it. I know you've listened to a few back episodes of Smart and Simple Matters, which is groovy. We're going to do The Seas of Awesomeness. So if you would, please, tell us one or two experiences that you had growing up, or maybe even something about your environment as a youth that helps us understand why you are the guy you are today.
All right. Well, this is a tough question, knowing that it was coming because I've listened to episodes. I leveled it down to one story and three quick things. So the story is, when I was 3 years old, I lost a $20 bet because I couldn't stay silent for 5 minutes. My dad was a youth pastor, and he had a bunch of college kids on a retreat, and they said, we'll give you $20 if you can be quiet for 5 minutes. And that's like $1 million to a three-year-old, but I just had so many questions. And so I think I developed questioning from a very young age, and my mom and dad never got tired of me asking questions. So that was definitely a big thing for me.
My question is, where does a three-year-old get $20 if he loses the bet?
Yeah, that's right. I think at that point you just cry mercy and cuteness, probably.
Okay, all right. You just write a little IOU in your worst handwriting, yeah, right, possibly, and say, hey, when I'm 10, I'll mow the lawn a couple of times. I'm good for it, Dad. Okay, cool. So you are a very question-oriented fella, which I can certainly appreciate. You said that there were a couple of other little quick hitters there, too. So maybe as you get old enough to understand that $20 is a lot of money, and mm-hmm. maybe there's other ways to use money or think about money, what is there anything else, any other context that you can give us in terms of your youth and how that shaped who you are right now?
Yeah, I got really addicted to reading in the fifth grade. I don't know if it was a rainy summer or something, but I ended up reading all 50 original Hardy Boys in one summer. I would read them morning, noon, and night under my blankets with a flashlight, and I ended up having to get glasses at the start of the school year. But I had a reading addiction from a young age. I also, both my parents worked from home my whole life, so that's all I ever saw. And last but not least, I kissed my future wife in the summer of the seventh grade when I was 13 years old.
Wow.
Formative.
Have you and Michelle been together since you were 13, or there's been some off again, on and again?
Off again, on again, like any high schooler. But yeah, we got sorted and married at 22.
Okay. Wow. So you read in fifth grade, reading the Hardy Boys, you read so much over the summer that your eyes freaked out on you and you had to get glasses, or that was just a natural progression of eyesight?
Yeah, probably both. I just ruined them.
Oh, wow. Wow. All right. Well, that is some great background as we get into kind of the heart of our conversation. Now, I've seen you say that you practice Quaker simplicity. And I think some people might have heard of Quaker, but they may be more familiar with the oatmeal than they are with the philosophy of Quaker simplicity and silence. Can you tell us just real quickly, in terms of practically speaking, what does that look like for you?
So I actually had the opportunity to visit the oldest church building in North America. It's a Quaker meeting house in Maryland. And their church services are very interesting. They meet on Sundays for an hour, and the entire service is in silence. And that has some interesting implications for their theology. Very few of them are on the same page. But talk about a refreshing break from the busyness and noise of life. And so you end up connecting with your thoughts and hopefully with God on like a whole other level because you've set aside time to just be still.
So what does being in the same place with everybody, if you're going to be silent, why congregate in the first place if there's not going to be any interaction? Your interaction is just between, say, you and God. Why do you need to be with other people for that?
Yeah, I actually don't know, Joel. Like, I mean, it's not something I do regularly. I'm not a Quaker, but there was something really beautiful about it. Like, I mean, you know, we've all been to these networking meetings where everyone wants to say how awesome they are and shake hands and give out business cards, but it was somehow more intimate to just look at each other and think.
I like that a lot. It's I don't know if it's similar in nature, but I've done group meditation before, and there's a lot more power in just knowing that you're existing in the same space as these other people who are there because of the same kind of belief or the same kind of intention. And there's just, I can actually feel that. You can feel the energy and the spirit in the room or wherever you are. So I get it from a philosophical perspective. I was just wondering what the origins were. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's pretty nifty. Now, okay, getting back to some of the practicalities of things. So I know you explain yourself as kind of a simple living type of dude. And I'm always curious to know, when you hear that word, simple living, what does that mean to you?
I think it means, well, for my wife and I, it means developing and cultivating a margin of time and money in order to focus on projects that we feel called to do. So my wife and I run a charity to fight human trafficking. We've made a couple documentaries about the issue, and I've now written this book on prayer. And we couldn't have done that if we were trying to pay for a mortgage and a couple car payments and paying down debt. And we just wouldn't have had the time or the money to do it. So simplicity for us is stripping out everything that's inessential towards achieving our goals and dreams.
That's cool. So this margin of time and money, though, do you use the same kind of mindset or the same kind of tools to get one or both? Is there just like a general one or two big things that you do in order to get this margin? Or do you have to take different approaches towards time and money?
Well, like, I mean, if you don't have bills, you don't have to spend time working to make money, right? So Michelle and I kind of had that epiphany a couple of years ago. I was reading Henry David Thoreau's book called Walden, and we were like, man, we've got to find a way to have affordable living. Like, let's just get rid of that bill in our life. So we ended up buying a 1975 Airstream trailer, and we like parked it in a trailer park, like in this beautiful, like forested grove. And so we live there 6 months a year in Canada, and our total bills, like heat, hydro, rent, internet, everything, are just over $500 a month. So then the other 6 months of the year, we try to avoid Canadian winters and station ourselves somewhere overseas, kind of base camp for 6 months, and we can afford to spend a little more. So we end up saving just so much money, and therefore we don't have to work a high-paying job or work in the corporate world in order to make so much money to pay all these bills.
And then, of course, you have the flexibility of time. In terms of being able to work on your own projects and not have a lot of expenses, you have the freedom to do your own kind of projects and also travel.
Mm-hmm. We don't even own cell phones. I don't know how many of us there are left, but don't own cell phones. I'm a vegetarian. We buy about 75% of our clothes used. We're carbon neutral. We just tried to, really create a margin of time and money.
Okay, you just dropped a lot on me. We need to rewind a little bit here. All right. I'm trying to trace the origins of this. It sounds like some of it from your youth and growing up, but you mentioned an email to me that you and Michelle took on the 100 Things Challenge a few years back. It's a pretty nifty thing. It's Dave Bruno's brainchild. And for those, you know, if you're listening and you don't know what the heck this thing is, it's all about creating better relationships, really of all kinds, through simplifying. And in this case, a lot of your stuff, I'm talking about you now, Jared, you got rid of your physical possessions. You're living in this small Airstream trailer, there's not a lot of room to put your things. And I know you don't have a storage locker. So where was this entry point into this world of minimalism and focusing more on relationships as opposed to your stuff? Was it with the 100 Things Challenge, or does it go back even further?
It goes back a little bit further. My wife and I were standing on top of the Hamilton Mountain brow overlooking the Niagara Escarpment. And we were talking about maybe getting married. And she said, I will marry you under one condition, and that is that you have to let me live in a Spanish-speaking country for at least half of a year at some point in our marriage, because she had taken Spanish as her minor. So I said, yeah, marry me, never thinking that it was going to happen. But 2 years later, we had kind of a space and time where we had about half a year to travel. So we got down to 88 combined possessions, and we bought one-way tickets, and we ended up traveling from Panama to Florida by land transport over 5 months. And we volunteered at eco resorts and intentional communities the whole way, and that changed everything. Came home, got rid of the cell phone, bought the Airstream, started buying used clothes. That all came out of that trip through Central America, all seven countries.
That was the only condition? We just need to live somewhere in a Spanish-speaking country for 6 months? Because a lot of people are thinking about this. They're like, my husband or my wife or my spouse, there might not have been an explicit agreement, but there were a few more strings attached than just that. That's pretty good.
Well, I think Michelle knew what she was getting into. We started dating at 13 years old.
Yeah, you're right. You go back way.
Yes.
This volunteering at eco lodges and intentional communities sounds fascinating. Why did you key on those two things as you were traveling to Panama?
Well, we knew that kind of creation care, environmental stewardship was kind of a growing issue for us that we wanted to learn about. My wife was actually born in Kenya, raised in Ethiopia, a missionary kid. So she saw, you know, the ravages of AIDS and war and poverty. And we always knew that we'd be fighting for, you know, justice and equality in the world. And obviously, soil, air, and water quality is one of the biggest and greatest, you know, threats facing humankind in the next few centuries. So, yeah, we just we just volunteered at a bunch of different places. Some of them were good, some of them were terrible, and we learned a lot about ourselves and about nature in the process.
Okay, what? So some were good, some were terrible. That's just the way the life is. Just like the relationships that you have, some are amazing, some are, ooh boy, got to get out of here. Experiences you have at events or travel or whatever it is. I'm curious, though, for the ones, for these intentional communities especially, because I know that's been a theme. I've talked about this with a lot of other guests before. What was it, what kind of people or what kind of setup, what kind of organization did these intentional communities have, the ones that were really awesome?
The ones that were really awesome. Okay, so the best one, I think, is actually interesting. It was called Rancho Margo. It was in Costa Rica, and it was actually founded by the guy who introduced Burger King to Europe. So I think he was kind of paying his debt to the devil, like paying his dues by founding this intentional community. But it was like an eco-resort, and we were part of the volunteer team. You know, we'd see flowing lava every night from the volcano and like hear howler monkeys in the hills. But yeah, like it was a beautiful place, like yoga twice daily. And I just like, my job was cooking pizzas. So, the guy who milked the cows would bring me rounds of cheese every day and I'd order all the vegetables from the garden. And yeah, it was a great place, but I think it was just, you know, well organized, was definitely key. A lot of these intentional communities are quite like hippie and mayhem. And there's a place for that, I guess. But when you bring a little bit of organization to it, it's incredible what you can accomplish.
Yeah, and when you have a guy who's dedicated to making pizza every day, I'm sure that that helps the spirit of everybody there and makes for a good environment too, right?
You got it.
That was your primary job, making pizzas?
Yeah, we were just there for a month. So I was on the pizza buffet. So I had, you know, I had to have six different types of pizza on the buffet every day. And like my day started with like collecting firewood for the stone oven. Like it was one of those. It was epic.
Wow. So yeah, obviously the output, this pizza is a pretty straightforward thing, but what you needed to do to procure the vegetables and the wood, that sounds like a pretty cool process and a pretty cool place.
Yeah.
One thing that I want to go back to, you mentioned about being carbon neutral, and you've already explained a bit why that is, and I'm totally on board with it. As far as I've always been wondering about this, how do you prove, whether it's to yourself or to others, that you are carbon neutral? Is there some kind of tool or calculator that you use?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I think first and foremost, Joel, we don't need to prove anything to anyone. No one really does. So I've actually never even thought about that before. But yeah, we used a calculator to see how much we were, I actually used like four or five different calculators because I wanted to like make sure I wasn't like, you know, chintzing or cheating. Figured out how much we were using. And basically, because of how small our living space is and because we don't have, you know, we don't have a TV, we don't have a microwave, we don't have cell phones, we don't buy we only buy like used laptops. We only use about 40% of what the average couple uses at our age with, you know, the lifestyle we live in. So we already consume far less. And then the difference, we've just used carbon offsetting for now. And our goal, obviously, is to become like carbon, I guess, positive or negative. Like we'd love to get to the point where we're on solar and wind, but because of where we are right now, we're just offsetting the difference while cutting as much energy usage as we can.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think it would be carbon negative, although you never hear anybody throwing around that term, so I'm just as confused as you are. For somebody else who's really interested in limiting their carbon footprint, what would you say for them to get started? Do they document their daily intake and output? Do they use one of these calculators that you've used? Where would I start if I wanted to go down this path of being carbon neutral?
Yeah, so I mean, if you just Google gold standard carbon offsetter, carbon calculator, something like that, you're going to find, I can send you the one I use, Joel, and you can throw it in the show notes. But so basically, you just find one of these calculators, and then you actually punch in, like, how many square feet your house is, your model of car in the year, and how many kilometers you drive. And, like, some of them are, like, quite thorough. And you basically just do a lifestyle audit, and then it tells you, okay, you're spending, you know, 42 kilowatts a month or whatever. And then you then go from there, okay, how can I reduce in electronics? How can I reduce in transportation? And then how can I offset whatever I can't get rid of?
how did you reduce electronics? How did you reduce transportation? You're going through it like using a calculator, you're saying it's a life audit, which makes sense. I mean, you're plugging all of your consumption, which is all of your habits, all of how your money is spent into this calculator, and you're assessing yourself. Am I doing good? Do I need to change? Were there some immediate changes that you and Michelle agreed upon just instantly? We need to do this.
Yeah, so like the first and biggest one, of course, is living in an Airstream is far less energy intensive than living in a, let's say, 1,000-square-foot apartment. So that's huge right off the top. The no cell phones thing was a good boost just in regards to there's a lot of conflict minerals in cell phones, and so I don't want to be part of creating demand for child, you know, sweatshop labor.
Yeah.
Same with why we only buy used laptops, same deal. And then clothes are a big one. You know, something like over 2/3 of all chemicals sprayed on American crops are actually sprayed on cotton. It's creating, you know, kids are getting asthma because of it. It's in the water streams and whatnot. So that for us was an easy, like, okay, we need to either buy ethical organic clothes or we just need to buy used clothes. So we found some good used clothing shops and consignment shops in the area. So we do mostly used clothes shopping, with the exception of undergarments, of course.
I didn't think clothing would be such a big part of it. I guess I'm doing pretty well on that front, just because I never shop for clothes.
As somebody you who's wear almost the uniform, freakishly
huge. I don't necessarily have a uniform. It's just somebody who's 6'6", I can almost never get clothes that fit me. So I just wear the heck out of any existing clothes that I have, and I guess that works pretty well. Sometimes,
do you know what you should do, Joel, is you should call up agents for like basketball players and ask for their hand-me-downs.
Oh. I'm going to have to figure out how I get in touch with the agents in the first place.
Fair enough.
But I bet you there could be some pretty cool hand-me-downs. I have a feeling
somebody
that those
listening
athletes
to this episode must know.
Yeah, but I think they've got more fashion sense than I do. I couldn't imagine having a 3-piece suit hand-me-down and rocking that. That's just totally not my style. I bet they've got some bumming around gear that would work great for me, though.
Yes.
I'm going to give that a roll. Okay, there's no clean way to shift into this, so I'm just going to make a kind of a break with what we're talking about, because you have some great stories. This book that you just wrote and published recently, A Life of Living Prayerfully, the trailer, by the way, I'm going to link to the video trailer in the show notes. When you sent me that, and it's just 3+ minutes, I was thinking, oh my goodness, all of this in 1 year? First of all, because I don't know why I keyed on this, probably because I grew up very Jewish, not ultra-Orthodox Jewish, but I've spent time with ultra-Orthodox Jews in both Israel and New York City, and I was just, to hear how you celebrated Passover with some ultra-Orthodox Jews in Brooklyn, can you tell us about that experience?
Yeah, so my year of living prayerfully ran from Passover of 2013 to Passover of 2014, and I emailed 78 Hasidic rabbis, and I got rejected by 77 of them, but one said yes, so I ended up having Passover with Hasidic Jews and the rabbi and his disciples. We were there for like 6 hours. We didn't leave till almost midnight. I'm like wearing a yarmulke, dancing around a pulpit. We're like, you know, doing like all the wine toastings and eating matzah balls and the whole nine yards.
And that's it. That just 6 hours of just hardcore Passover.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I brought a tape recorder and a list of questions, and, you know, they, like Jewish people, they know how to fight in a spirit of love and grace and understanding. And so they would just holler at each other as they're discussing different theological points. And of course the rabbi gets the final word, but it was amazing to just see like two people would disagree, but they did it with such a spirit of love that it was far more productive, I think, than how the average, let's say, religious person or just the average person in general tends to argue. We write the other person off. We slam the other person personally, whereas they're yelling and screaming at each other, but it's the issue, not the person.
Okay, so the whole having Passover with this Hasidic ultra-Orthodox family in Brooklyn is pretty nifty. One thing, though, is going back to the video trailer that you had for the book, you mentioned about halfway in, I even got to meet the Pope and have lunch at his house. And I'm thinking, dude, you totally buried the lead there a bit, which is something that I do quite often. How come you didn't lead with the whole having lunch and meeting the Pope?
Well, like, I mean, I don't know if it was intentional, Joel. Like, it was just one of many, many things that happened. Like, I mean, I went to North Korea for New Year's in this book. Like, I walked across a bed of hot coals and went to a nudist church. So, like, there was tons of, like, super, like, life-changing, life-memorable experiences that happened this year. But, yeah, like, meeting Pope Francis, being granted an audience, having lunch at the Vatican, that's something I will never forget. It was so cool.
What was it like?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we had tried for months to get an invitation, like wrote letters, postcards, emails, phone calls. I actually even got like a fax number and, you know, nothing, nothing, nothing. So we fly to Rome. We get the tour. We go to Assisi where Francis was from. We go to Monte Cassino where Benedict was from. And our last night in Monte Cassino, there's a Skype voicemail that says, "Hello, this is Monsignor Alfred. Please come to the Domus Sancta Martae at noon tomorrow." So we rushed back to Rome, and nothing's open on Sunday. We've been traveling for months. So my wife and I actually met the Pope in jeans and yoga pants.
Ooh, classy.
Yeah, but he's a nice guy. And, you know, so we had a couple minutes to chat with him and ask him about prayer. And he twice during our conversation asked me to pray for him. And I thought that was so cool. Like, here's the spiritual leader for a billion people, and he understands his need for a power greater than himself. So that was kind of awesome. And he gave us rosaries as gifts, and they were stamped with his papal insignia that said, "Lowly but chosen." He's entitled to a big mansion, like a papal mansion, but he lives in a spare room of the guest house and eats his meals in the cafeteria. So he was at the next table for lunch. It was just nice to see like that humility across prayer people that I met around the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And wow. For somebody who could have any kind of lifestyle, to see the voluntary, I know we throw this word around, at least in the circles I travel in, voluntary simplicity. I mean, Pope Francis, he doesn't just live it. He is that. I mean, he just has that. And to see this, you're right, the spiritual leader for a billion people, just live like anyone else or mm-hmm. even below the standards, at least from a materialistic perspective of a lot of other people, is really encouraging and really inspiring to somebody like me.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, I saw there was a bagpipe just real quick in the trailer as well. Tell me you know how to play bagpipes.
Bagpipe?
Didn't I see a bagpipe?
I don't think you did.
I'm making that up.
I think so.
I'm making it up. All right. Tell me this then. What places or experiences would you add if you could?
I did everything. I went to Jerusalem and Bethlehem and Mount Athos, where no women have been allowed for 1,000 years. I went to Paris and, you know, the world's biggest church and Prayer Mountain in England. Oh, man. If I could add anything, man, that's a tough question, Joel. I would have loved to have had an interview with Kim Jong-un. quite different from the movie. Mm-hmm. Wasn't able to interview the dictator. But that would have been interesting. I tried to actually meet with the Pope's personal pastor, but our schedules just didn't jive. But he's a super nice guy. We were emailing back and forth for a while. I tried to meet Billy Graham. You know, he was the personal spiritual advisor to 13 American presidents. But he has really good security and wouldn't let me in. So that was sad. I would try to meet Billy.
Yeah, meet Billy. It sounds like you're just intensely grateful for what you did get to experience, which is really
totally
cool. It's not like you're just focusing on, oh, man, totally missed that window. And that's one of the things I like about folks like you, where you just, the kinds of, the position that you put yourself in and the kinds of experiences that you get to have and the level of contentment you feel as a result of that and the level of gratitude is just off the charts. I love it. Now that this trip is over and you have resumed roughly, you know, normal life, if you will, what do you normally do on a day-to-day basis to maintain that level of gratitude, to maintain that level of contentment with what you have?
So many good questions. I think I'm a spiritual person. I spend time in prayer on a daily basis, and it's most often in silence. I think prayer is a two-way conversation, and so it's not just a monologue or a speech. It's actually a dialogue or a conversation. So just like listening to the world, listening to others, listening for that, you know, that quiet voice of God. I don't know. I'm just so grateful. I think when you put yourself in a position where you live in a 200-square-foot house, you've given yourself some natural boundaries, And it helps you just be so grateful that, like, yeah, this is how, you know, most of the world does not have many more square feet than this, and they certainly don't have it so nice. And I don't know, just I'm so grateful for my life. Like, even the simplicity of marrying your childhood sweetheart, I know that's strange, but, like, there's something just so content about just not complicating things, just in general. I like having a simple life.
Yeah, I've mentioned that before, too. As far as the dating scene went, mine was awfully simple, too. I had one girlfriend before.
Yeah, that's right, in high school. Yeah.
And that was it. I don't lament that at all. I don't wish that there was a wild and crazy period in my life. I love the fact that I found my one so quickly, and that we're still super, super happy. And that's the reason. The fact that I get to wake up and go to sleep in the same bed and just to experience life with Melinda is something that I'm smiling right now. I mean, probably from ear to ear. It's just super, super cool.
That comes out on your podcast, too. Like, that often comes out that, like, you clearly still love your wife and you're so grateful that it wasn't a messy process.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wow. It's just seriously wow. All right. Well, hey, I want to make sure that you get an opportunity to talk about, I'm just going to throw this one out here. And I know for you, this could be a total softball, just a big one. Is there anything we didn't talk about that you would like people to know?
I think from a practical perspective of, like, a good takeaway tip just for life in general, you need an absolute and total disregard for failure or rejection. The things that I do, I, like, really kind of throw myself out there. But the way I see it, like, you're currently at a baseline of no, like, no, the Pope's not going to meet you. No, they're not going to let you into North Korea. No, you can't visit Westboro Baptist Church. And the worst case scenario with an ask is that they say no, but you've already got that. So I don't know. I think having just an absolute and total disregard for failure or rejection is so helpful for, like, not just getting ahead, but, like, making a contribution in this world, just putting yourself out there. Just don't have fear, or at the very least, have courage.
Can you tell us in, say, a minute or so how you cultivate that kind of thing? Because there's a lot of people who are listening right now saying, how do I do that? How do I have an absolute disregard for failure or for rejection?
The most really simple habit is something that James Altucher talked about on his podcast recently. He said every week or every month you need to do the coffee challenge, where you go into your local coffee shop, you buy your coffee or your latte or your tea, and then when they tell you the price, just ask, can I have 10% off? Like, just for the sake of, like, you're almost always going to get rejected, but you were going to pay full price anyways. So allow yourself to experience that little bit of discomfort. I listened to another podcast recently where this guy was like, he was in a foreign city and he was like, I'm going to introduce myself and talk to 5 pretty girls every day. And at first it was, like, so awkward, but then he just, like, got to meet a bunch of, like, really cool and different people. Just cultivate in the littlest ways, asking without fear.
Asking without fear. I'm going to contemplate that one a little bit. Well, I will also make sure that I recommend, if people want to do some contemplating, I know that you have the trailer and people can download the first 2 chapters of your book for free at livingprayerfully.com, which is super cool. Where else, if people want more of you, can they find you online?
Twitter, Jared Brock. Facebook, Jared A. Brock. Website, jaredbrock.com.
Okay, you make it so simple. As long as people know how to spell Jared, J-A-R-E-D, Brock's pretty forward. Man, how do I get a Brock last name instead of Zaslavsky? Nobody can ever spell my last name. Well, hey, man, this was a ton of fun, and I'm really, we talk about gratitude a lot on this show, but just for me to you, like, I'm sincerely grateful that you approached me to join. It was an instant yes once I got an opportunity to see who you were and what you represent in the world, and I'm really excited for what you and Michelle, the kinds of projects that you're taking on, some of the things that we haven't even discussed in terms of the green light, red light, and man, I'm going to link to some of the things in the show notes just because I want people to go nuts. I want people to see the kinds of things that you see and the kinds of ways that they can support the causes that you support, because it's really important stuff that you're working on way, way beyond the world of simple living that we were just talking about today. So thank you for coming on the show.
Well, hey, Joe, I'm so grateful to be had.
All right. Thank you again, Jared, for such a fun quality chat. You actually have me thinking what I would say to the Pope if I got 2 minutes of his time. I'm imagining it would probably start something like humana, 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 or just simply, whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't think he'd respond very well to that. Although he's the Pope, maybe he'd be cool with it. To see the projects that Jared and his wife Michelle have already completed, like that cool book that we spoke about, and what's coming up for them, check out the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM076. And to peep what's up with me, maybe even pull the trigger on supporting this show via Patreon, head on over to valueofsimple.com/Patreon. My man Felix just joined the ranks of the super sweet patrons. Thanks, Felix. But we still have a ways to go on hitting our first milestone where this show goes weekly. Can you imagine? A sweet serving of Smart and Simple Matters every week. Ooh, hot diggity. Let's do that thing together. If you want to do, say, life together, particularly by connecting community with simplicity, join me and about 100 other simple living enthusiasts at Simple Rev 2015 in Minneapolis, Minnesota on October 2nd and 3rd. The list of amazing participants continues to grow. Joshua Becker, Farnoosh Brock, Mark and Angel Chernoff, Donnie McLurkin, Courtney Carver, plus Jean-Francois and Cheryl Moreau, just for example. Man, I would love to literally see you there. I have a big hug with your name on it, and I promise it will come from a freshly shaven, fresh-smelling fella if you get your ticket at simplerev.com/tickets. Now, if you want to send that picture you just took of yourself listening to Smart and Simple Matters in the wild, and you took a picture, right? If you didn't, snap, snap right now, then tweet it to at Joel Zaslavsky. You can email it to joel@valueofsimple.com, or heck, go nuts with a link in the show notes and let everybody see it at valueofsimple.com/SASM076. Thanks again for tuning in for a rollicking, insightful, and gratitude-charged episode. Your attention and support mean everything to me. It's now time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky, creator of All Things Value of Simple.